Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Welcome back to the 750, presented in partnership, as always, with bloggingtheboys.com, the SB Nation Podcast Network, and Vox Media. I am the O, RJ Ochoa. He is the 7-5 two-time Super Bowl champion. His hands are a lot heavier than mine. Tony Casillas. Tony, happy Thursday to you.
Well, happy Thursday to you, and I cannot believe it's already, tomorrow's Friday, and we're looking at the almost a halfway point of the season. It seems like it just goes by fast, but hey, real quick, how about last night? Wasn't that kind of an epic night if you're a sports fan? Got the American League, the playoffs,
yeah,
the Red Sox and the Astros, and then you have the opening of the NBA season. So it was great. I mean, I think I text you during the course of all this stuff going on, and it's one of those nights where no one was home, and yeah, I'm home by myself with the two dogs on the couch, and got the remote control. But, man, what a great night for sports.
Totally agreed. Like you said, we were texting in the middle of it. I live in San Antonio, obviously, and I do a lot of work here in San Antonio. So Spurs are, interesting season for the Spurs. Obviously, no Kawhi. DeMar DeRozan dropped 28 points in his first game. Tony, the Spurs are on pace for 82 wins this year. So, I mean, you know. Hey. but you mentioned it.
I'll bet that right now.
I will not take that. But you know, I mean, you're a DFW guy. Luka Doncic looked great.
He did. That was, obviously that was kind of the storyline, him and the number one pick for the Phoenix Suns. That dude looks pretty, pretty seasoned. He looks like he's been playing professional basketball in Europe.
I guess this is interesting. Before we get into all the Cowboys talk, are you a Mavs guy? Is that your team?
Yes, I am. I'm a Texas guy.
Right. Just so everybody knows. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm a Mavs guy first. And I think this year, DeAndre Jordan is kind of interesting to see the whole different dynamic on their team this year.
Yeah.
And then the Rockets, which last night just was a tough loss to them versus the Pelicans. And then I guess San Antonio was only the Texas team that won. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much a bandwagon fan. I support everyone. I'm a Houston Astros. I mean, why not?
I talked to Jordan Lewis about this. People that listen on our podcast feed heard that after the Jaguars game. And I was telling him that I was going to get 2K because I'll probably get it like on Black Friday because I'm a little cheap in that regard. but I was telling him, I was like, dude, I don't want to play with the Spurs. I mean, I love the Spurs, don't get me wrong. But when you're playing 2K, you want it to be fun. And I was like, dude, I think I'm going to play with the Bucks because, I mean, I'll have Giannis. And then we were talking, you and I, right before we started recording about the Final Four being here in San Antonio last year. Dante DiVincenzo lighting up for Villanova, now on the Bucks. I'm thinking that me, Dante, and Giannis Antetokounmpo, that's a threesome that is going to be a lot of fun.
Hey, nice on the pronunciation, by the way.
Hey,
That just kind of rolls off the tongue there. But yeah, I used to play Xbox, mm-hmm, Madden with my son until he decided that he knew a lot more than I did. And God, he used to really piss me off because here he was as he was 10 years old. It was a little bit more, I guess, competitive. And then as he got older, I was one of those. I'm one of those competitive parents that, like, all of a sudden the Xbox got unplugged in the first quarter because he's beating me so bad.
That's okay.
But I do love me some video games. I don't get a chance to play as much, but I hear about how great my son is. But that's the 2K is a great game.
Is your son is a senior in high school? Is he a Fortnite player? That's not my cup of tea. But I mean,
no, I don't think he is. He doesn't really talk about that.
That's all the rage. So I was just making sure.
All the rage is that Call of Duty. But I don't think he's checked into that too much. Thank God, I guess. but he's all into Madden, and I mean he's a fantasy football guy. I mean he plays three or four different leagues to take it a little step further. So I think that kind of keeps him more involved in the game. And he's always, I mean he's kind of a nervous wreck during the football season. You know, the red zone. We talk about that. But anyway. It was a tremendous night last night, RJ.
Dude, it was. Poor Astros, man. I really, when Alex Bregman went to bat in the bottom of the ninth, I think everybody across, as you mentioned, the state of Texas really thought that he was going to pull something off. That was kind of anticlimactic. I mean, it had been an awesome game, and just to have it, you know, end like that felt a little empty. It was
and then the home run would be a home run by Altuve.
Oh, man.
That was, you know, that could have gone both ways. But you know what? Houston had such a great run last year. Boston, man, I tell you what, they're a tremendous team. But you know what? It's always great to see them, the Houston Astros, involved. And so last night you have a lot of things going on. You had obviously the opening NBA season of the Rockets, and then you had the Astros playing. But as we know, our show's about football.
That's right.
It's about the Cowboys going on the road versus the Washington Redskins.
That's right. You know, the Cowboys, it's already week 7, and this is their last game before the bye. That kind of snuck up on us, I feel like. Before we get into the Redskins, let's talk about something. You had a tweet on before the night of sports, as we just talked about Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper, Oakland Raiders wide receiver, sounds like, according to every NFL insider, the Raiders want to shop Amari. And so you look at it, and every team's a little interested. Former first-round draft pick, former Alabama wide receiver. I mean, all the pedigree is there. You said in your tweet, you said, should the Cowboys trade a first round pick? Because that's the rumor, that the Raiders want a first round pick. And cool, of course they want one. But most of the responses were, I'd give, you know, most people I think are in the third round neck of the woods. Some people are willing to go up to a second round pick. But what would you give up? Because I'm with you. A third round pick for Amari Cooper, let's dance, let's party, and then let's cut Deontay Thompson and let's be done with it.
I guess it all comes down to how bad, you know, John Gruden's trying to have a fire sale. It seems to me that everyone is like jumping ship there. It kind of reminds me back when I played for the Atlanta Falcons, when Jerry Glanville, the crazy Jerry Glanville, came in, and just either you had to be one of his boys or you know he would ship you out. And,
right.
But I mean, that's, you know, it's an analogy, it's a comparison, because I ended up coming to Dallas because I didn't really fit that, you know, that that mold.
Yeah, good thing you'd be a Hawks fan if not. So, you know, it kind of works.
Exactly.
Out.
Right, right. And so, I mean, I'm thinking about how bad John Gruden wants to, you know, I guess get rid of Amari Cooper. They're not going to just give him away. But I really thought about this, because last year during the course of the draft, we thought that maybe Calvin Ridley may be an option for the Cowboys. And it seems like we're always talking about, you know, how the wide receiver core, how that can become better. And I just thought, well, this is kind of your 2019 version of the draft. If you know, Amari Cooper, you look at what he can bring. He's not one of those contested guys that's going to go up and get these balls. But he's a guy that gets separation and can run. And he's been known to be able to catch the football under the circumstances. So it's kind of like you're flipping seasons and drafts. I mean, do you give up a first round? Do you give up a second round? I don't know. I think a second round, for sure. I think he can create a lot of opportunities. And again, it all comes down to what this offense is about. I mean, it's kind of a moot point when you consider what they've done this far and how they utilize their wide receivers.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing. I mean, as you mentioned, the John Gruden situation, I can't even imagine what that would be like. That's a level of purgatory that I don't think any NFL fan wants to go through. But Amari, I mean, you look at it, first two seasons over 1,000 yards, at least 5 touchdowns in both of them, had 7 touchdowns last season, you know, missed a couple games, fell shy of 1,000 yards. This season, without question, off to a really bad start, but I feel like it's fair to Amari. I feel like it's fair to any Raider. If you approached me and said, RJ, what do you think of insert Oakland Raider name here? I would give that player the benefit of the doubt, because it really does seem like John Gruden's fingerprints all over this thing have muddied the whole situation. So I'm willing, as a football fan, to give Amari, Derek Carr, anybody and everybody a pass, because it seems like the common denominator of all the regression there is John Gruden. There was a really great tweet, I thought, on Wednesday morning. Bob Sturm from The Ticket in Dallas and The Athletic. It was a list of guys that had 3,000 yards since 2015, which does include Amari. He was a rookie then. And you tell me, Tony, if you would not give up a second-round pick for any one of these guys. You got Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Mike Evans, Brandon Cooks, A.J. Green, T.Y. Hilton, that's the least impressive one so far, Jarvis Landry, Demaryius Thomas, Odell Beckham Jr., Larry Fitzgerald, Golden Tate, Doug Baldwin, Emmanuel Sanders, Adam Thielen, Marvin Jones, and Amari Cooper. And again, I understand that 2,000 of those yards, so to speak, came his first 2 years, but I don't think you can deny that the talent is there, and it's certainly worth exploring.
You can't deny that either. And just the list of wide receivers, that's pretty impressive to be in that company. You know, I don't care if it's the first 2 years of your football season in the National Football League. I mean, if you put up over 2,000 yards receiving, 3,000 yards receiving, that's impressive. And this is going to be an ongoing question about this offense and being able to find a wide receiver at number one. I guess the question is, RJ, is Amari Cooper a legit number one?
I think that that's contingent upon where he plays. You know, if Amari goes to Minnesota, is he number one? Obviously not. You know, if Amari goes to Atlanta, is he number one? Obviously not, but Nick Saban might be interested because that's a lot of, you know, Crimson Tide receivers. But, I mean,
there's a lot of them in the National Football League.
Yeah. I don't know how you can look at the Dallas Cowboys wide receivers and say with a straight face that Amari Cooper is not better than all of them. I understand if you think, and I don't mean you specifically, but if you think that Cole Beasley is better than Amari Cooper, I'm fine with that. I can swallow that. I mean, Cole Beasley's definitely better at some things. He's better in the slot than Amari Cooper. I don't think that's ridiculous to say at all. But Amari Cooper is better than Allen Hurns. He's better than Deontay Thompson. He's better than Tavon Austin. He's better than Michael Gallup. He's better than every single receiving option you have, even though he's having a down season in 2018.
Well, I think he's proven that he's better than those guys. I mean, Cole Beasley is certainly a different type of wide receiver in the slot. I mean, I think you can't – it's hard to cover him at times because he's so quick, and he's just a different type of receiver in this offense. But, you know, if you look at what Amari Cooper has done in his young career, I mean, he has shown that he can be a viable wide receiver. I mean, you cannot put up those type of numbers. And that's what I like about it. I mean, people on Twitter, oh, Tony, I wouldn't give up a first-round pick for him or a second round. Well, what else do you have better? I mean, I'm just throwing that out there, considering – what type of receivers that you have. You want separation speed.
Sure.
And that's what he gives you. Separation speed, where you know that once he breaks out of a route, there's going to be separation between him and the defender. And if it's a quarterback, you can start, the ball will start coming out of your hand before he breaks into his route. And knowingly that that's going to happen, that he's going to be able to create space, creates a lot of confidence and the most important thing, creates a lot of chemistry between those two players.
I think it's interesting because people tend to value draft picks, or overvalue draft picks, I should say. It's like,
That's a great point, too. I agree. I agree with that.
You know,
exactly.
It's just simple. It's like any time you make a big purchase in life. I mean, whatever it is, you know, you think, oh man, I could either have this car or I could have this, you know, $20,000. And you think, man, that $20,000 could go a long way and whatever. You talk yourself into whatever. And the point is that, you know, let's talk about third round draft picks for a second. So this year, your third round draft pick's Michael Gallup. Would you trade Michael Gallup for Amari Cooper straight up? I think that's fair. I think you probably would at this point. But then you get to because it gets to a point where, well, I'd rather have Michael Gallup for 4 years than Amari Cooper right now and have to pay him, et cetera. I mean, that's the, you know, the ticket.
Well, you got to remember the Cowboys traded Ryan Switzer to Oakland, which Oakland traded him to Pittsburgh.
Right. And so I think that's fair. So would I rather have, from a talent perspective, avoiding, you know, contract details, would I rather have Michael Gallup than Amari Cooper than Michael Gallup? Sure, definitely. I don't know anybody that wouldn't. Would you rather have Amari Cooper than Jordan Lewis, last year's third-round draft pick? See, that's where I think you'd lose some people, because some people would say, oh, you know, well, Jordan's playing well, but you need a wide receiver, man. If you could trade Jordan Lewis for receiver help right now, you would do it. You know what I mean?
That's a great question, because I guess it's the value, what he means to the team. And you look at Jordan Lewis, what is his value to the defense? And what would Amari Cooper's value be for the offense? Right. Would the offense be much better and more improved with someone like Amari Cooper because he's not in the system? You know, Jordan Lewis is a young guy. He's to a point. He's proven himself. But what's the best thing about that? If you're a franchiser, he's created value for himself. Mm-hmm. So then you're looking like, well, maybe this guy's got some value. Then maybe we can work a deal and maybe look into trading him. But it's a great scenario. It's a great question. Amari Cooper, I always thought you got a guy that's been in the league and has proven himself. I would take him. I would take not more of a chance, but I guess a flyer. But I would take the opportunity to bring him in, as opposed to drafting someone that, yes, I mean, you want to build your franchise through the draft, but someone that's kind of proven himself, you kind of know what you're getting. You've seen him play in a National Football League.
Yeah.
You know his tendencies. That's a proven commodity to me.
Absolutely. I mean, it's why when I go to a restaurant that I like, I typically get something I've had before. You know,
I'm it's going to taste great.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not that dude. You know, there are people certainly that, you know, they get something new every time they go to a restaurant. That's cool. Live your life. But guess what? I'm going to get the chicken parmesan because I know it's the bomb at this restaurant.
Absolutely.
But you think about it, like, I mean, the last four, just for example's sake, Cowboys third round draft picks, 2015, Chaz Green, disaster. 2016, mm-hmm. Malik Collins. Okay, good player.
Yeah.
2017, Jordan Lewis, you know, there's pros and cons. 2018, obviously Michael Gallup. So you think about it, I mean, that it's not like you're giving away a guarantee. That's where the overvaluing happens, I think. People look at it and say, oh, man, but this third-round pick, it could be Malik Collins. It could, but it could be Chaz Green. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and you got to look at Amari Cooper. Again, is what he's done is compared to what these three guys are expectations. And look, it all comes down to money. It all comes down to the big picture. You know, first round, look, I mean, if it's a guy that can come in and just help you right away, and it's like going back to the Earl Thomas, you know, how we beat that scenario up about how a guy like that could come in and help your franchise. Well, you know, that passed. He got injured. But now you're you know, with Amari Cooper, and it may be a situation where you may get it. Maybe it'll get him for a second round
mm-hmm.
or maybe a third round or package something together. It just depends how bad that they want to part ways with him.
You know, I can't understand what John Gruden's problem is.
I can't either.
But, I mean, you know those are some tough times. I went to the game in Oakland last
year. Khalil Mack. I mean, just think about it, that scenario. If you found a situation like that, you bring Amari Cooper in there, and all of a sudden Khalil Mack is a tremendous player.
That's the other thing is, again, just kind of looking at this on the surface. Okay, John Gruden wanted to give away Khalil Mack. Okay, what's Khalil Mack look like? Okay, he's a bomb. He's the bomb.
Potential MVP of this year.
He wants to give away Amari Cooper. Okay, cool. Well, the last time this dude wanted to give somebody away, he turned, you know, it went really, really badly for him. So I would be interested in that. It's kind of like, kind of one of those things like, you know, somebody says, oh, every time I don't watch the Cowboys, they win. Okay, then guess what? Don't watch them so that we can get everything going our way. But the Amari Cooper thing I think is interesting. Obviously, the trade deadline is approaching. You know, Cowboys don't seem like they want to do much. They seem a little shy for whatever reason. I think the Cowboys are a team that really does overvalue their draft picks. Stephen Jones was on Ian Rappaport of NFL Network's podcast this week, and he talked about how, you know, they build through the draft and they've had success in the first round, et cetera. And he talked about how you want to pay your own guys. And I think that's a good methodology, but that methodology is predicated on hitting on every single one of your draft picks, and the odds simply are that that's not going to happen.
And, you know, that probably makes me think that maybe they won't do anything, because I think Stephen Jones has got his hand on a lot of the decisions now. And let's say 3 or 4, maybe 5, 4 years ago, before Stephen Jones got more involved in making decisions and helping Jerry along, maybe they would have been more prone to like jump into and making a deal done. And I do believe when Steven says that, mm-hmm. that he feels like that maybe they need to, you know, this is the trend that we're trying to set in with younger players and paying our own guys. I mean, I really agree with him on that.
It sounds good. And it would be great if you drafted Pro Bowlers with every one of your picks. You know what I mean? But I think that, I think that the draft has to be the foundation of how you build your team, but you gotta look to the outside. You know, you gotta be willing to bring in free agents. And yeah, the Cowboys brought in Allen Hurns, whatever, but I hope that doesn't spook them from going and getting a player like Amari Cooper. I mean, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, my last point on this would be that, you know, Amari Cooper to Michael Gallup or an Allen Hurns, I mean, how similar are those guys? Because it's not a big body guy that's going to go up and get contested balls. And maybe there's some similarities between those type of players. And maybe that's kind of like, well, do we really want to bring another guy that's like that? Mm-hmm. Although he is good at separation. He's got tremendous speed. And he's been known to be able to make the big plays.
It is, you know, you look at it. I don't know that maybe they want to do that with Dak. Dak's not a guy that throws deep downfield. So, but separation is valuable anywhere you can get it on the field. We'll see, though. I do think that Amari will get moved. I don't think it would be if I had to bet, and I think if you had to bet, we would not bet that it would be the Cowboys. It's probably going
to
be
I don't think. I don't think it's great to think about the possibility, but maybe. You know, this team is set where they want to go at the wide receiver position.
Tavon Austin was flying to Philadelphia, it looked like, according to his Instagram story. He has an injury the Cowboys are getting a second opinion on. And on his flight, he again put this on his Instagram story. It was one of those flights, I've never experienced this, thank God, where the masks dropped down. There was, I guess, enough turbulence.
Oh, gosh.
That happened. So, it was, you know.
That's not, that is not good.
Yeah, I mean.
Fortunately, I haven't experienced that either. I hope I don't ever have to.
Yeah, I agree. It looked, we tweeted the video at the Blog and the Boys Twitter feed. You know, thankfully, thank God, Tavon's all right. But it looked kind of scary. Another video, I know that Mike Leslie of WFAA shared this on Twitter as well. Antoine Woods, Cowboys defensive lineman. Tony, I'm sure you experienced this. He put a video on his Instagram story of him, like, picking at his middle fingernail, and, like, the nail comes off. Like, he's messing with his nail, like, with his thumb, and he just, like, plucks the nail right off.
It's
haunting.
Probably getting your finger smashed. I've had that happen a few times. And then all of a sudden, the blood starts to. You have to release the blood. You've ever had you've had an ingrown toenail, right?
I mean,
or even an ingrown nail where it just or you smash it and there's blood that cuts underneath it.
All I know is I've never flicked my nail off my finger like Antoine Woods did. It was
Actually pulled one off my finger, you know, my thumb or finger, whatever it is. It's. You know, you want to get that release, but no, I never really posted anything that's.
But that happens. That's all I'm saying is that happens in the trenches. You know, those battles, they do that.
Well, sometime I need to post a picture of my fingers to our listeners and put it up on the website because I have some really gnarly looking hands, and they are hands of a defensive lineman.
You know, I know Brian Baldinger from NFL Network. He always posts his pinkies like. Sideways.
Oh my gosh, I mean, it's going sideways.
Yeah, it's, you know.
Now I'd have to get that fixed.
Right? I mean, like.
The one I got on my finger, the middle finger now, it's not quite. It just looks like it's twice the size in the middle, and you probably see it now. And it's unfortunately in the middle is my middle finger.
So when you show it to people, it comes off, you know.
Yes. Right. I'm always self-conscious of my hands, and. But it's not so bad where I need to have something done cosmetically.
Right.
But like Baldinger's one, the one that like goes out to like a 90-degree angle, that's probably something I'd probably fix.
I respect it. I respect Baldinger too. You know what? Whatever his cup of tea is. But that happens, like you said, if you're a defensive lineman, and I think that's the key for the Cowboys this weekend. Stifling Alex Smith, getting to Alex Smith. They've got a lot of defensive linemen that can do that. They have their core, if you want to call it that, again, for the second week in a row, and DeMarcus Lawrence, David Irving, Randy Gregory, Malik Collins, Antoine Woods, all the hot boys. I think that, you know, this is big, and the Cowboys are going up against Bill Callahan, obviously their former offensive line coach, but I think that that's the way for them to win this game is just destroy Alex Smith.
Well, their offense is kind of a mirror of the Cowboys. They really haven't gotten anything going downfield. I mean, their offense is ranked 25th in the National Football League, 12th in rushing football. They got an old guy back there, future Hall of Famer, Adrian Peterson, which is, even at his age, is still is a legitimate threat. But I'm like you. I think this is a game where Alex Smith, he can make mistakes. Not similar like Blake Bortles, but you know, he's a guy that's he's mobile, which I think people don't they kind of underestimate his ability to move around. But I think it's a game that sets up very well because they do. I mean, they want to feature Adrian Peterson, and they want him to get going running downhill. And as you just mentioned, I mean, the way the platoon of defensive linemen are playing now, I think that that's, you know, you want to put the ball in Alex Smith's hand and have him try to attack the field and be able to really press himself and try to make plays through the passing game.
I want to talk about something that few would know better than you, and that's why the 750 is so awesome. People say all the time, every time a division game happens, you can throw the records out. It's a division game. They know each other so well, etc. And something's really different about this particular game because you have a new quarterback, and that changes things to a degree. It's not like you're going up against the guy you've gone up against for 4 years in a row or something. But is that true? I mean, or how true is that? That, you know, and again, players change, teams change, etc. So I understand Alex Smith is not Kirk Cousins. That's a particular difference here. But how true is that? I mean, do you really truly have a feel against a division rival that you wouldn't anybody else, or is that something that's just fabricated over time?
Well, first of all, what I'm going to miss is Josh Norman and Dez Bryant. I've already missed the lead up to the smack talk and everything. You don't have
Samsung
that in the
commercials we got last year.
They were great. Just awesome commercials. You don't have that, but yeah, I think you kind of get a beat on someone. And you know, this game right here, I always, as a player, loved to play the Deadskins. That's what we called them. And it was just kind of resonated, but it just kind of, it features that rivalry. And I think in an NFC East game like this, you know, and the people think, it's just not like it used to be. Well, I think it is, because I don't think you look at the NFC East in itself. I mean, the way it's setting up right now. I mean, I started looking at this, RJ. You look at the teams in the National Football League that have four wins or more. I mean, there's like seven teams in the National Football League. Yeah. The rest of them are three wins.
Yeah.
But, you know, back, you know, to the point of, you know, this game of getting a beat on someone, you know, Alex Smith is a totally different quarterback than Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins, to me, I thought he was really underrated.
Sure.
And look what he's done in Minnesota. I mean, as far as a passer, is it an advantage for the Cowboys this year? I think, absolutely. I mean, they got the number four ranked defense in the National Football League. And it's a team that wants to run the football. So I really think that this really sets the table is set really nice for the Cowboys defense.
Kirk Cousins, by the way, is a very proud San Antonio Spurs fan. So he's a smart guy too.
Yeah, that's why you like him too.
you know, I think this is interesting, and I think that knowing them is a very interesting detail. You know, Jason Garrett, I think you look at division rivalries, and a lot of times it's split. You know, it's usually, well, we win at home, they win at home. You know, it's tough. That's what makes it tough, et cetera. But Jason Garrett's only lost four times to the Redskins. I don't think people realize that. I mean, he kind of has their number to a degree, and that's because they've changed coaches, obviously, since 2011 a few times when Jason Garrett took over the Cowboys. And one of those wins was the 2015 regular season finale when the Cowboys started Kellen Moore, and that game was meaningless. And in fact, that was the last time the Cowboys lost to the Redskins, the Week 17 game in 2015. Dak Prescott has never lost to them. He's 4-0. I think that's worth noting. I think that's worth talking about. Zeke Elliott missed the last game against the Redskins because it was in the middle of his suspension last year. You mentioned Dez and Ryan Switzer earlier. That was the game that Dez became the franchise's all-time leader in receiving touchdowns. Ryan Switzer had a punt return for a touchdown. So it is a lot of new faces. But I do think you're right. I think this sets up well for the Cowboys. They haven't won a road game this year. They could do that on Sunday. They haven't won two games in a row yet so far this season. They could do that on Sunday. And that, I feel like, you know, we've spent a lot of time dogging on this team, but if they pull that off and if they get that positive momentum going into the bye week, we're going to be sitting here on the 750 saying, well, man, you know, they got the Titans coming up. They suck. I mean, you know, this team could be 5-3. I think it's really, this is a tide turning sort of game.
I think it sets it up for a make or break season. And considering, you know, you go into bye week, you want to feel good about yourself. You want to come off a win. It, you know, you want to, whatever you decide to do during that week of just getting some rest, get off your feet, travel, whatever it is, it's almost not, it's always great to rest on a win. Mm-hmm. Makes everything better. And then you come back to work and it's a lot more energy in the building and everything. But you look at the Cowboys, I mean, they used to be great on the road. It's from 2014 to 17, they were 23-9.
They didn't lose at all in 2014.
And at home, they were 15-19, and they've yet to win a road game this year. So I'm with you. I think that this game right here is a team, because I know you're sitting there, you're telling each other, hey, look, guys, we need to win on the road. I mean, this is a game that we really, really need to have. Coming off that big win versus Jacksonville, we proved to the world that our offense is not dead. We are alive. Mm-hmm. And now we just got to keep this certain momentum going against an NFC East opponent where we don't like each other. We know we have the familiarity with them. We know what they do. We'll see them two times this year. And, you know, you want to get one up on everyone when you play an NFC East game.
I'm curious about something else before we get a little bit more X and O-y. Jason Garrett talked about this during his press conference on Wednesday. It's been written about and talked about across a few outlets so far this week, how the Cowboys are staying in D.C. for a little bit longer to go to the African-American Museum there. I know that a lot of the leadership council members for the Cowboys really were the ones that wanted to do this as a team, and I think that's awesome. How do things like that impact the team? I know this is technically happening after the game, but what this reminds me of, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, was when the Cowboys went to New York a few years ago and they went to Ground Zero. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, you know, seeing photos of that, and just you could see just through photos how powerful of an experience that was to go through as a brotherhood, as a team. Do things like that, something that has nothing to do with football, looking at the history of our country or whatever, I mean, do they emotionally tie it together? I mean, is that something that is, you know, working in their favor as one collective?
I think that's one of the things that's so great about a team sport. And a lot of fans do not see the human aspect, the human, the nature, the personality of an athlete, especially a football player. They think, oh, they're just this, you know, this ironclad personality that doesn't have any feelings. And I think when you get together as a unit, as a team, as a company, and go do something like that, you get to experience all these things together. And it's your family. It's your football family. You're together. You're going. It's kind of one of those weekend retreats where you go and you try to really just create some continuity.
Like when you do the ropes courses or whatever.
Go and live off, herbs and everything off the land and just, this outdoor organic type of experience. But you're in Washington, D.C., which is by far the best city to visit and see our history of our country. I don't know if you've had a chance to really experience that, but it's really moving. I mean, the change in the guard, we had a chance. I did it with my family, but just to be able to do that with all the guys. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to go see, the African-American Museum that they're going to go see together, and some of the things of the social issues that the National Football League is experienced, I think it's really good, because I think guys really, really, they're able to create, relationships, because you don't spend a whole lot of time with some of your guys. I mean, you go to work and you go home, but I think when you're together, you the blood, sweat, and tears, and be able to experience something like that, I think it builds a lot of continuity. And especially if you win, it would really make the experience even more gratifying.
That's interesting. I just, you've talked before about how road trips can be a different thing, because it's almost less distractions because you don't have to worry about tickets or family or whatever. And, you talk about it. I just, in my own mind, it would be different. For example, at the facility, everybody's in their sweats. But, you go to something like this and everybody's dressed up. You know what I mean? Everybody's a little bit – it's a field trip sort of thing. I thought that was really interesting and really cool for the Cowboys to do. I know you do too. So I think that's got to be working in their favor in terms of bonding them. But, we talked about the defensive line. You mentioned Josh Norman earlier. He has kind of managed to have an impact against Dak and Zeke. If you remember, their first win ever was against the Redskins on the road back in 2016 in week two, the one that launched their long winning streak. And he made Zeke fumble. And he kind of got in Zeke's head that game. And Alfred Morris had to come in so the Cowboys could put that game away. I think he's probably the Redskin that makes me the most nervous just because of what he's been able to do historically. Who's that guy for you?
You know, I think he was probably, when I look at him, yeah, I think that Josh Norman on that defense, he is the guy that really, really makes the leadership role. I mean, you know, look at him last week against Carolina, arguably had one of his best games of the year, hadn't had an interception in 20 games. I did not know that. You think of Josh Norman, you think he's a ball hawk. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's a long time going without a pick. But, yeah, I think when I agree with you. When you look at that team, you look at Josh Norman and his leadership and his ability to – understand and you know the offenses. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, he's the identity on that team. And you know, again, I'm going to miss the matchup against Dez Bryant. And you know, that's to me, we got so used to that and we expected that, and now that we don't have it, I think a lot of people like myself and you are missing it just like us.
It is weird. Yeah, I wonder if Josh will get just as up to play Allen Hurns as he did Dez Bryant. I'm sure he will. It's the same thing, same rivalry, you know. But I think Josh is somebody that causes some nerves. Jordan Reed, but Byron Jones, although, you know, Byron's a little bit of a different in a different role now than, you know, the years that he blanketed Jordan Reed, certainly back to his rookie year when the Cowboys won there on Monday Night Football. But there isn't really anything on the Redskins. And I don't think this is overconfidence, but there isn't anything that makes me feel sort of wow. You know, there's nothing that really makes me nervous. They did beat the Panthers last week, and I think that's impressive. I think I don't want to underestimate them. I think they're a team similar to the Cowboys. I think they're a team that's capable of having really good games if Alex Smith finds the right groove, if Adrian Peterson's running downhill. I think their defense is a little cute, maybe not as great as the Cowboys, but overall, I feel like this is a game the Cowboys should win, although I know right now technically they're 2-point underdogs. I don't see it. I don't see how the Redskins beat the Cowboys unless they have a perfect game. But to be fair, we did just watch the Cowboys have a perfect game against the Jaguars.
Well, I thought the win against the Green Bay Packers is 31-17. That was impressive.
That's true.
Last week, if you look at their games, they're a lot like the Cowboys. Again, they really haven't found their stride when it comes to offense. But as you mentioned, Jordan Reed, he has 20 receptions. Vernon Davis, he's a viable man. He's an older guy, but they really like to use their tight end.
You know,
but Adrian Peterson. Yeah, I mean that's, you know, to me, if you're really dependent on Adrian Peterson, I have so much respect. A future first ballot Hall of Famer,
fellow Sooner.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there's a couple of Sooners on it. Trent Williams are starting an offensive tackle, which is going to be a great matchup. But, you know, collectively on that offensive side of the ball, and they really, really like to feature their tight end.
Yeah. As we record this, John Keim, who covers the Washington Redskins, tweeting that Paul Richardson and Jamison Crowder are not practicing today on Thursday. They've got some receivers that can fly. I think Jamison Crowder, when he's healthy, is really interesting. He's somebody who really surprised a lot of people. They have those kind of quick, shifty guys. Chris Thompson, their other running back, is one of those guys that kind of developed into a larger sort of Lance Dunbar role there in Washington. But I feel like they have a tiny bag of tricks, you know, and their big trick is Adrian Peterson, and they're counting on that. And if everything's going that way, I feel like they can certainly have success. As you mentioned, they beat the Green Bay Packers. That's a big win. They beat the Carolina Panthers. I just don't see how Adrian Peterson has success against the Hot Boys.
I think that the way that this, I like the matchup. I mean, Jordan Reed and Leighton Vanderesh, Jalen Smith, the way these linebackers are playing as far as coverage on the tight end. I mean, I like the way they're athletically, how they match up against, you know, some of their weapons. And, Adrian Peterson has played so hard for so many years. I mean, he's overcome a lot of adversity. Remember the year he blew out his ACL and then came back really,
MVP.
Really fast.
Yeah.
And then the next week, the next year almost rushed for 2,000 yards. So you never can doubt the guy. But again, he's what, 33 years old, and he's still trying to, you know, make a, you know, I guess prove something in a National Football League, although he doesn't have much to prove. And I'm not going to downplay that because I think that, you know, Adrian Peterson is a competitor. I mean, he's one of the most, I would say, intense runners that really, really likes to take the punch to the defenders. And, you know, that's what they're going to try to feature in this offense. And as you mentioned, all the receivers, I mean, they're kind of like, they're similar, you know, Jameson Crowder, Paul Richardson. I mean, they're speed guys. Mm-hmm. But again, I think the matchup, which I really like, that I think the Cowboys win, and that's the linebackers covering the tight ends.
What's harder to tackle as a defender? Is it harder to tackle somebody like Adrian Peterson that's going to try to run you over? Or I know we've talked about this before. Or is it harder to tackle a Barry Sanders person who's
Sanders is so elusive. But, you know, it's the yards after contact. It's kind of like Zeke Elliott. Mm-hmm. And you look at how many yards. When you hit him, he extends it to another 4 yards. I mean, that's why he's got almost 5 yards per carry.
Right.
Because it's only going to take one guy. And when you mentioned gang tackling, those are the guys you have to just swarm and really just try to get three or four guys to tackle him. And, you know, that's the challenge that. But Adrian Peterson, I mean, again, at his age, it's a lot different when you're 25 than when you're in your 30s. I mean, all of a sudden the body doesn't recover as much. But, you know, the adrenaline and just his whole persona and the way he runs and – is really, really what he tries to hang his hat on.
You know, we still haven't seen Zeke and Adrian Peterson. I mean, they don't play against one another, obviously, but we didn't get to see them. The Cowboys did visit Minnesota during Zeke's rookie season, but that was the season that Adrian Peterson was hurt most recently. As you mentioned, he did obviously tear his ACL way back when. But I'm excited to watch Zeke and Adrian Peterson, and I actually kind of feel like Adrian Peterson is a good Redskin. It kind of works for whatever reason. I'm really happy they didn't let him wear number 28 because that's Darryl Green as far as I'm concerned. We were talking about Texas A&M Kingsville before we started recording. He's a fellow Javelina, but I don't know what it is. It works. You know what I mean? There are just some guys that make sense, and an older Adrian Peterson makes sense as a Redskin.
Yeah, it was funny. I played in a golf tournament last February, and it was the Legends tournament. It was the Cowboys versus the Redskins, and Darryl Green was there. And boy, and people, when they think that the rivalry doesn't live, it did back then because Darryl Green hates the Cowboys. And we were there. We were in Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland. We're playing in this golf tournament. But Darryl Green, it seems like he just retired last year. The guy played for 30 years. I mean, the fastest guy in the National Football League at one time. Adrian, again, I was thinking the same thing that you were thinking about both of these guys. You know, Zeke Elliott, if he continues, certainly a future football Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. And then you have Adrian Peterson, arguably one of the top 10 running backs that's ever played.
Right.
That's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer on the same field. And you got to think that Adrian Peterson's got this thinking, hey, you know, look, I'm going to overshadow the young kid. You know, he's going to be running with his hair on fire. He's going to get a little bit more in his step. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe he has, again, I always think Adrian Peterson, that's what makes him so great. He always feels like he's got to prove himself.
Right. I think he's done a great job sort of inducing challenges or chips on his shoulder to overcome, whether it be coming back from injury or proving people wrong, whatever the case may be. I think the game really does come down to him for the Cowboys. We've spent a lot of time talking about him, but I think that's because if you stop Adrian Peterson, I think you're going to stop the Redskins. You know, we saw Alex Smith against the Cowboys last year. The biggest play he made was that 20-yard Hail Mary at the end of the first half, which was really embarrassing for the Cowboys. But there's no Tyreek Hill on the Redskins, thank goodness. And I don't think that by himself he can beat the Cowboys, especially with the way their defense is playing.
Well, and you're right. And it's another game for the Cowboys to get them in situations where, you know, create some turnovers and get them in third and long situations where they can just exploit and, you know, up front, just really try to get after Alex Smith and create opportunities for them on defense to get takeaways. And I think the matchups, when you look across the board, I really like the Cowboys' defensive front. I mean, they have the potential to have really seven, eight guys that can platoon and come off the bench and really, really create problems with, you know, for Alex Smith. Again, it's getting them in the third and long situations, right, and then just unleashing the Kraken on them.
So that's a good way to put it, the Kraken. I think that's a rum, isn't it? I think that's a rum. I'm more of a Captain Morgan. I know, but I mean I'm with you there, but I think I want to say that I've had that before. The bottle is shaped like an octopus. Like it's got like
You
handles.
Know, I've not tried that one.
I'll Google it and I'll send you the photo afterwards.
Yeah.
Please. I remember it not being great. But anyway,
Or at least that Kraken after.
Right. Yes, exactly. So you mentioned their front seven, which obviously these days includes Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch. This is sort of, I think, something that we need to talk about. I wrote about this. It should be out later this week at BTB. Would you play Sean Lee? Let's even assume, call him 97, 99, whatever, 100% perfect even if you want, in terms of health. Would you play him? Here's my case against it. I'm team rest Sean Lee. Mm-hmm. You're right up against the bye. You've got a great defense. It's balling out. You're getting great linebacker play as it is. Do you need this game? Of course. I mean, you need every game. But if you can manage to get this last game, it's a bit of a gamble. I realize that. But if you can do that and give Sean Lee the rest of this week and the week of the bye and the week leading up to Tennessee, which is even on a Monday, so you give him an extra day, I mean, you're preserving Sean Lee. That game's in November. And for clarity, the month of November obviously is extremely important for your cause if you're an NFL team. I would do everything I could. I'd maybe suit up Sean Lee, you know, keep him out there, you know, if something doesn't go your way, whatever. But I would do everything I could not to play Sean Lee. Because right now the Cowboys are kind of playing with house money a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've been in situations and seen players before. You're injured and a young guy comes in and just kind of passes you up. And all of a sudden you're kind of a guy without a job. And I think, I saw where Jason Garrett said that he's going to get him in the rotation. But, you know, to your point and to what you think that you should do after the bye, I mean, Leighton Vander Esch, he's a leading tackler on this team, you know, tied with, Jalen Smith. And I don't think anyone expected him to just evolve into this tremendous first-year player at this point of the season.
Totally agreed.
Right. And so it's kind of a, you know, it's difficult, I'm sure, for Sean Lee because no one likes to lose their job. But how do you justify, you know, putting Sean Lee, especially if he's not, you don't know if he's 100%. And, you know, he has the leadership. I mean, he, without a doubt, Sean Lee, had he never had these injury problems, I mean, he would have probably been to four or five different Pro Bowls, okay? Mm-hmm. But now you kind of look at the state of your team. You know, what the chemistry and everything that you're working with. I don't think Leighton Vander Esch would have a problem with it because he's a rookie.
Right.
And there's a certain amount of respect. But we know what respect's all about in National Football League. It's playing the guys that are giving you an opportunity to win. And I really think it really doesn't matter if you play him now or after the bye week. I think Leighton Vander Esch has continued to get better week in and week out. The only thing that's going to really change that, playing Sean Lee ahead of him, if Leighton Vander Esch gets hurt.
Right. That's an interesting, I don't want to say an interesting take, but interesting way to frame this, because I'm not saying you're saying this, but part of the argument that could be made is almost, well, you know, I'm not even talking about Sean Lee's health here. I'm talking just Leighton is balling. I'm not taking
exactly.
that off the field.
Forget
the injury aspect here.
That's the grueling truth, mm-hmm. really. And I think for every player that has, they all go through this. Mm-hmm. And that's the worst thing about getting the injuries. And I think Sean Lee, I mean, deep down inside, I mean, it's, you know, he understands that. He understands that, look, you know, that's the risk you take, especially when you have a guy that you drafted in the first round, mm-hmm. this expectations him filling that void and knowing, you know, Sean Lee is not, I mean, he's not naive. He understands that, look, I've been injured. They got to bring guys in there that can help us win. And it hurts. It stings. But, hey, it's a tremendous problem for the Cowboys to have.
Do you think that somebody who's been in locker rooms, certainly that obviously, and I'm not trying to compare them because they are different situations, as we've said before. But so 2 years ago during the Dak Romo thing, that's something that everybody has an opinion on. Everybody thinks, well, I'd stick with Dak. I'd bring Romo back, whatever. That's something that everybody sees because it's the quarterback position. It's the most visible position in sports. Is that seen to the same degree, kind of what you're saying, within the locker room? Is everybody saying, man, you know, Leighton's, like, again, forget the injury aspect, forget resting him just to keep him safe. is everybody saying, no, right now Leighton's balling. Why would we play Sean if Leighton's playing so well? Is anybody kind of seeing that to the same degree that they would the Dak Romo thing, for example?
I think it's different because as a quarterback, I mean, he is the leader on your team. He makes the offense go. He does a lot of different things and tangible things that go on. It's kind of a locker room thing. It's more like who's going to be our quarterback. And I think, you know, that whole scenario with Dak and Romo, you know, they were clicking. I mean, this team was on a winning streak, and everything started happening. And you know, why change it up? And you know, and Tony himself, I mean, I guess it's similar in the degree of injuries both these guys have had. I mean, look at Tony over his career. I mean, I always thought Tony's one of the toughest competitors ever played for the Cowboys because he always played through pain. Same thing with Sean Lee. I mean, injuries really catch up to you. And, you know, there's a reason to justify. I mean, I think the Cowboys got to, if they decide to like, hey, look, Sean, we'll get you in and rotate, but we really think that we like Leighton because he's, you know, I think collectively, I think Leighton will eventually, and I'm just, you know, I'm maybe this is a bold prediction. I know that we make these predictions, but when you look at Leighton, his progression and what he really can do overall, based on what we've seen, okay, we're judging on the last, what, seven games or six games. I think the upside is more for him than it would be for a Sean Lee in the prime of his career because of his height, as we talked about, his flexible player, athleticism, and I think he's a very intelligent player.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I think maybe the way to say that is right now we maybe feel more promising about Leighton Vander Esch's career than we did at the time of Sean Lee's prime, which partly was due to even in Sean Lee's prime we'd seen him be injured a lot.
Asterisk would be injured,
right? Yeah. And so we even during Sean Lee's prime, I think we understood like this dude's a great player, but he's always going to be hindered by this. Whereas right now, Leighton's ceiling just feels higher for that particular.
Yes, game. And there's not any hurry to get Sean Lee on the field because it's not like last year when Sean Lee wasn't on the field.
Right.
We saw the decline in their defense, which is just crazy. That you know, when you looked at you know how they played with and without Sean Lee, totally different.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. Something else Stephen Jones said on Ian Rappaport's podcast was the success they've had in the first round. And you look at it since 2011, obviously Tyron Smith and Mo Claiborne's kind of the one little bit of an outlier. Obviously Travis Frederick and Zach Martin and Byron Jones, and you got Zeke and you got Taco Charlton and Leighton Vander Esch. In terms of their impacts, their rookie year, because Tyron Smith has become a monster and everybody else, et cetera, but their rookie year, I think Zeke was the biggest impact without question during his rookie year. I think Zach Martin had the second biggest impact his rookie year. And right now, six games in, I think you can make a strong case that Leighton Vander Esch is the next guy because Tyron Smith wasn't a beast his rookie year. Travis Frederick was okay his rookie year. Taco Charlton obviously didn't do much last year. But to your point, Leighton is kind of replacing Sean Lee. That's a huge impact his rookie year.
Your rookie year and being able to absorb and grasp that defense.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the hardest part about that, I think a running back, it's a little easier because I mean, it's all based on your ability to run and excuse me, and hit the holes and just having this football aptitude and basically just run the ball and it's more athleticism. And I'm not taking anything away from Zeke Elliott, but then you look on the defensive side of the ball where you're Leighton Vander Esch and you're seeing a lot of this stuff on you know, unfold in front of you. You're looking at calls, you're trying to identify formations and everything and then cover people. I think the learning curve, excuse me, it's more difficult. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not taking anything away from Zeke. I mean, his rookie year was phenomenal.
Right. It's just different. You know, it's just a little different.
It's a different type of, you know, it's an adjustment.
Mm-hmm. I think he's the key. And I think, you know, Leighton certainly deserves all the props in the world that we're rightfully, you know, giving him. But I think Leighton, it should be said to that cause, he's got Jalen Smith who makes his job. I mean,
we haven't even really mentioned that cat. I mean, that dude.
They are just.
Wow. I mean, both of those guys. I mean, the tandem. I mean, both of them are playing at a very, very high level.
You know,
I mean, Jalen Smith, I love watching him run.
It's been It's been a while. I mean, people thought sort of circa early on in the Jason Garrett era, okay, Sean Lee, Bruce Carter, that's going to be the pair. They're going to be the two linebackers that really get it going for the Cowboys. That never materialized. Obviously, when Sean Lee was out for the season in 2014, Rolando McClain stepped up. Everybody said, okay, when Sean Lee's back, we're going to get Sean and Rolando McClain. It's going to be awesome, etc. Never really kind of clicked all together. Then they drafted Jalen Smith. Okay, after this first year, it's going to be Sean and Jalen. They're going to be the pair. They're going to be the team, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm not saying that we haven't seen that because we have to a certain degree. But really, the best tandem of linebackers that we've seen so far this decade for the Cowboys has arguably been this. I know it's a very small sample size, but this six-game stretch between Jalen Smith and I can't say six games because Sean Lee was a part of them for three. But still, I mean, what we're looking at, my point, with Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch, they could be the linebacker duo for the Cowboys of the future. You know, you've mentioned before, I mean, Thomas Davis and Luke Kuechly in Carolina, et cetera, they have the potential to be that sort of pair.
Potentially, yes. I think, you know, six games in the season and the way they've really come on, without a doubt. Now, this, you know, they continue the style of play, continue to create big plays. This defense continues to stay in the top five in a National Football League. I mean, a lot has to do with the way these two linebackers are playing. And, you know, you top it off with their defensive line. I mean, that's the thing about it. You know, one thing about this defense, which really works, is in this style of defense where the defensive line, you know, you're somewhat of a protector. I mean, you're supposed to get upfield, but these guys, when they identify blocks, I mean, they hit the holes. I mean, they blow holes up, mm-hmm. and then they were able to, you know, it's a fast defense. These guys are very, very fast, and that makes a big difference. You got guys that can run, especially on that second level, and it creates a lot of opportunities for your defense.
It's really cool. And I like stuff like this. I know we've talked about it before. They got good numbers.
You know, they're fast. The speed.
54 and 55, just it looks right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Leighton with the neck brace thing he wears. I mean, he just looks – I mean,
the cowboy collar he has.
Yeah,
on.
Like if in the hospital of football players, like when a birth happens to a linebacker, that's the baby the doctor.
They come out with a neck roll on.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like that's a line. If I had to like design a linebacker, it would be Leighton Vander Esch. You mentioned predictions. It's that time before we get out of here for this week on the 750. Tony, I'll let you go first. We both predicted a Cowboys loss last week, so good job us. But the Cowboys are 3-3 again. They have the potential to get their first road win, their first winning streak of the season this Sunday in Washington with the bye week coming after. You believe the Cowboys will?
Well, I'm going to go with the tide of some consistency.
Okay.
And you know, I know you have to win on the road sooner or later, and the Cowboys got to figure a way how to win on the road. Mm-hmm. And I look at this, you know, I'm going to look at last week is the light bulb, the switch finally came on and they're going to create some opportunities for this offense. And I really, really, the key in this game is for the Cowboys to start fast. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to be able to find a way to score points. You know, Jacksonville, you know, last week, I mean, this offense is a lot better than Jacksonville. We saw that. They don't have as many injuries. But I really like the matchups. You know, I think that the Cowboys will figure out a way to score points. I really feel good about this opportunity for the Cowboys. I'm going to pick them to win.
Okay, all right.
Man, I don't know what I'm saying, man. I mean, over the course of this early season, I haven't really done a very good job of picking them, but I don't think anyone else has. We didn't see what, you know, happened last. We didn't see that coming. I'm going to pick the Cowboys to win 27-24.
I like
get
it.
Their first road win.
It's close. It's dramatic. It's interesting. This game has a lot that I like. It's just visually, it's like that chicken parmesan I mentioned. It's Cowboys Blues in FedEx. It's an afternoon game. It's fallish.
Nation Capital.
Yeah, so I got to imagine it'll be an early sort of sunset. A lot of this game will be played in the dark. I mean, it's a beer with foam at the top. You know what I mean? It's just perfect in so many ways. I'm going to take the Cowboys as well. I think that they've found something, and I think there's a lot of power to the things we've talked about. I think there's power to just kicking someone in the teeth the way they did the Jaguars and feeling that confidence. I think there's power to them all, you know, them feeling justified. Rob Phillips of DallasCowboys.com had a tweet that of Cole Beasley's 9 catches against the Jaguars, 7 were on third down. That's unbelievable. I mean, that's absurd. And so I feel like it was a game where everybody walks off that field and they flex their muscles. They say, yeah, we told you. We can do this. We just did it. It feels good. It's like when you're at the driving range and you finally hit one just clean straight off the tee and you think, okay, I do have this in me. And I think they're about to go play. You know, right? You know, you always want to end on it. So, okay, putting the driver up. I'm headed to the tee. And I think that's where the Cowboys are. I think they're feeling themselves. I think the Redskins are not an easy opponent, but Jason Garrett doesn't really lose to them, and I think there's power to that, too. I think the Cowboys win this game. I'm going to go 31-23.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, hopefully both of us are right. And, oh, by the way, when I order a beer, I don't like a lot of foam on top of mine.
It just depends. It's a very circumstantial thing. You know,
I always think about me as a bartender. It's like when you have a party and you pour beer, you give someone a glass of, you know, right, glass of beer, and you pour, you have a keg, and
yeah,
you have all this foam, and like, hey, you look like you never were a bartender. But
right.
I like that little foam on the top. It depends on if it's an ice cold mug, but I hear you on that.
See,
brother,
I was thinking in my mind, in the analogy, I was thinking of a Guinness.
Well, that sounded good too.
Because we had Conor McGregor, so I was thinking Guinness, you know, I mean, I was still in that mood. So, you know, that foam is good. You know, I hope it's a win. It certainly has been a good week. As you mentioned, I have to believe it would be a great 2 weeks if the Cowboys are riding a 2-game winning streak into Monday Night Football, Jason Witten's return against the Tennessee Titans. You and I will be back next week to recap this game and talk about how everything we said happened and we were totally right, and it'll be a good time.
Yeah, every week we're always right, so make sure you guys tune in next week, and we'll slice all that up.
Yeah, it will be a lot of fun. Tony, this was a blast. Same time next week. We'll be back on Monday. I know we got off to a late start this week, but we'll be back on Monday. Thanks for the good times, and enjoy the weekend of sports. It's going to be a good one.
All right, Big O. You likewise.
This was the 7-5.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.